parenting is supposed to be, if we're talking, you know, right, it's supposed to be a tandem.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got it. You got it. Yeah. We work off of each other. Even and that's one thing that I when I say how it affects me is because that's somebody supposedly who knows me and you could lash out at me like that. So you mean to tell me the whole time we've had our daughters or we've been married or we were just dating, I've never supported you and my kids, protected you and my kids, provided, you know, so for you to open your mouth and call me a deadbeat. What does that say back to like what I was saying my dad said?
Yeah.
Respect. You don't even respect me enough, let alone love me.
This is the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! Don't know if this is a fair question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway, bro.
Might as well.
What do you think, if your dad were here, what do you think he would say to you about her?
It's funny you say that because my mom always say, man, if your dad was here, man, he'll take his cane, hit you on the head several times, you know, because your dad was a lot of things. But and she feels like I get it from my dad, my emotional entanglement. My dad was that. Like one time, this person, this young lady, he was very much into. She didn't reciprocate the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it tore him up. So and I didn't know that history until my mom broke it down to me. Mind you, my dad is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, so your dad would smoke about 3 pack of cigarettes a day. You drink, you know, alcohol.
Hmm.
I'm like, huh.
That sounds eerily familiar.
Familiar. I was like, and that's why she said she was not so much, like when it came to her attention, she was like, yeah, I've seen this scene before.
Wow.
You know? And she was like, I'm just telling you, point tattoo. That's what point tattoo, which means, you know, hold my head on my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let her dictate how I respond.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that therapy really helped me with. And so if my dad was alive today, first and foremost, he would sit and talk to her, get her perspective, understand where she's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's something that my son is doing and he shouldn't be doing, oh, I'm for sure going to hold him accountable.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And also, I can't speak to you wife to wife, but I'm going to speak to you a husband to a wife.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that you got to factor in. And, you know, they say hurt people.
Hurt people.
Right. So her and I, you know, I think my dad would have brought that to her attention. Look, my son, you know, is probably not the most perfect person in the world, but, you know, your bills are paid. He take care of the family, you know. A lot of times, and that's why I'm a big advocate for people to do therapy, because there's a lot of things that she's not looking at, you know, she's only seeing for self-preservation pretty much.
Let me curve the conversation a little bit, because I don't want us to get to a place where we're speculating, you know, what she or she doesn't, we don't know what's going on in her head.
True.
What do you think your dad would say to you?
Ah, that's even a better question. You know, first of all, he would call out the emotional entanglement, you know, as a lack of respect, you know, in terms of, okay, have you owned your wrongs?
Mm-hmm.
You apologize for your wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
You're working on righting your wrongs,
mm-hmm.
you know, but if this continues to, like, somebody sees you working on yourself to, for the betterment of the relationship, and they just continue to drop gasoline on there, where is the love? Where is the respect? You know? So he would say, those are the things that you have to really ask yourself. Does this person really love me? Does this person really want to work this out with me?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's one thing he always said, you know, one person can't keep fighting, you know, and then the other person is not reciprocating it or even acknowledging it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he would say, really take a good look at that, because that right there could be the detriment of self. And you're not, if you're a detriment to yourself, how are you going to be able to help your kids, you know, be there for them or anything of that nature?
Mm-hmm.
Don't let how she responds, how she acts out on you dictate the narrative, you know, change who you are. You know who you are. You know where you're cut from. And one ought to respect that and love it. But if it's not there, you got to do a lot of evaluation of the relationship, because it might be best to just go separate ways.
Yeah.
I think anything could be fixed. He would say that.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a desire, a will factor in there.
You talked a little bit about going to therapy and how therapy has been helpful to you. In what ways has therapy helped you get through the challenges that you have faced during your relationship and perhaps continue to face in your relationship?
Not casting the blame, you know, at her, because she's just a I don't want to say a vessel, but she's a measure of, you know, knock on the door, she opens the door, grants me access to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's as far as it goes with her. Now, if she doesn't open the door, there's law papers put in place for her to open that door,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I just have to continue to hold myself accountable. Now, you know, the union, right, split.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about, how do I better my relationship with the kids? Yes, it would be great if the mother and I could have a co-parenting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, therapy has helped me to understand that everybody has their own pilgrimage. You know?
Mm.
And like you said, let's not speculate.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to be able to hold myself accountable, look at myself in the mirror and say, you know, you did your best today. You know, you built healthy relationship with your kids. You know, you didn't do anything to invoke a reaction from the mother. And then if she does react for some reason, that's her,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for the longest time, I always look at everything that happened as it's her fault. It's her fault. It's her fault. It's her fault. And I look at my role in it too.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started to look at my role in it and understand, I started to get back the power of self, the power of being a father, the power of being a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started to get those in increments, you know? And so therapy is, that's half of the work.
Yeah. But
the other part is, you know, really meditating and being of sound mind and sound energy. That's important to me, you know, because if it's not that, I would have a bat with high blood pressure. I would. Almost my mom, she's like, I think that's what scares her the most is when she took a trip with me and really saw the toxicity of that relationship. You know?
Mm.
And she was like, yeah, you keep on telling us, but I would have never believed you until I came and saw it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, you don't want to, you got, because if you go, how am I going to see my grandchildren?
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to be around. So therapy keeps me on that track, you know? So I recommend it that everybody do therapy, especially fathers.
No, I mean, that's so key. You know, coming from someone like you who you're going through it. It's not like once this conversation finishes, Right. Everything is going to be all right. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? This is something that you're going to keep going through until Right. Something changes.
Right.
So to be able to say how instrumental therapy has been for you in the perspective of someone who's going through it still, is I think it holds more weight for someone who might be dealing with something similar and has been iffy about finding help in that way.
And that's I think that's the taboo. Because men, fathers, have always been taught, and that's the thing across all cultures. It's constant. And this is a matter of my opinion, because I've dealt with a lot of different cultures. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I dealt with every culture, but I've dealt with more than 10 cultures. And the number one thing I see with men, you're supposed to take it, be a man about it, they tell you. Show no emotions. What kind of man are you? You're crying, or you're emotional. Don't talk about your feelings. You know? And continue to provide at all costs. So it becomes like it's what is expected of you, period. You know, you already have expectations coming out of the womb as a man. And I think therapy helps to navigate all of those expectations, because expectations are not bad. You know, if governed correctly and you know, in the right space, and therapy allows that for you to connect all the dots, you know, to make it make sense. Because, yes, I'm going to provide for my family. Yes, I'm going to take it, but I'm not going to take it in silence and not express myself, you know. And I think that's what was the biggest thing from my dad, is he was always willing to express himself. You know, he's not going to hold it in. He's not going to bite his tongue neither. And it could be very raw. But you will never hear anybody say anything negative about my dad. They'd be like, yeah, his response is a matter of his opinion. But what can I do? We all are entitled to one.
Yeah.
You know, and he expresses himself. And
yeah,
they ultimately really appreciate that, you know.
Last thing I want to ask you, or want to get into before we start concluding, is you and I have spoken over the years, and we've spoken about your experiences in court, going in and out, trying to fight and advocate for yourself so that you can continue to have access to your daughters.
Right.
I want you to talk to me about what that experience has been like for you. What has your going in and coming out of a courtroom, what has that communicated to you in terms of who you are and your role as a father? Do you feel like the court system is favorable to you as a dad, is there to help you find an equal footing, or has your experience been different?
First of all, the court, from what I experienced, and maybe would have been different if I was in Florida, but the Tennessee court, I never felt so low, undervalued. I paid nicely for a lawyer to probably do 2 weeks on a major yacht somewhere in Greece or something like that.
Wow.
The money that I paid for that was supposed to be for my defense. I felt defenseless. Okay. I felt like I went in there tutuni, naked, and was taking all the hits. I would have never thought that my about to be ex-wife would allow the court to diminish me in the way they did. Okay.
Wow.
First, I felt her lawyer was more of my lawyer because she stuck to the script. Like, we're not asking for him to pay this amount of money. He's been paying money to take care of his family. Mm-hmm. We just need something ironed out. Mm-hmm. And in my head, and I'm telling my lawyer this, if that's the case, why are we here? We could just do this in mediation.
Right. That could have just been done in front of an arbitrator.
Right. Right. The way Tennessee works, you go through all of that, then you go to mediation.
I see.
So, you know, I'm not rich. You know, when my mom goes and tell people how much the court demanded for me to pay her, they're like, oh, your son is doing something then you don't know, because that's just asinine, because, you know, I have 5 kids and I'm not paying that much.
Wow.
And on top of that, I'm going to tell you what was very humiliating. At this point, traveling on my dime to go see my kids without court order paperwork, paying her rent and my rent. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to get real specific, her rent was $1,400 only. Mine's is $2,400. And taking care of her vehicle, because that's what transport my kids to and from
school, you know, appointments. School,
right. Mm-hmm. So her car has a problem, I take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
I say, go take it to the Toyota dealership, tell them to call me. It's taken care of. Okay. If the kids need something, a trip, vacation, I take care of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's not that I got a lot of money.
It's but you're doing these things for your kids.
For my kids. So when the judge says we're rewarding the mother X amount of money in child support, temporary child support, and X amount of money for alimony, that came out to $1,900. Then he says, you have to pay her lawyer fees too. Her lawyer said, no, I don't need him to pay. I'm doing this free bono for because, she's like family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's it. He's like, no, you need to get paid. And he looks at me. I don't care what you have to do. Open a credit card, borrow the money from your family. You need to pay that. And I look at my lawyer, saying nothing. I have all these documentations of how I'm being harassed by this woman, how she belittles me. She don't mention nothing. She just sits there just like me, says nothing. So I went in to a slaughter because I left there like, how am I going to eat? So now this job just became even that more important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way I'm going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't feed myself, so I have to stay on the road. I've been living here for over a year and like 5 months. The past 2 months is the most I've been in this house because I lived on the road. So there was a lot of demoralizing factors, and I felt like nobody understood my plight. If the court can't understand my plight, who will? I'm just a father trying to be active in my kid's life. I don't want all the other stuff that comes with it. You know, sitting there, the judge was like, is this marriage not able to be reconciled? You know, and she goes, absolutely not. I'm like, wow. Like, what did I do to you that was that bad? And then again, take self out of it. It's about the kids. You couldn't sit there and say, yes, he provide for his kids. He take care of his kids. You know, we're just here just to the mere fact to just settle this and have papers to protect both of our interests, since you and I can't come to a table and sit down, you know. And then when we went to arbitrary, happened to be a family friend.
Of hers.
Of hers. So she got everything she wanted. So I don't mean to curve too much off, but I just want to circle back and make everything come full circle. You know, you come in here to Florida, it's not a matter of, in her sense, this is merely, I'm just accounting for what I see.
Sure, sure.
You know, it could be different, but this is what I see.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of you come in here to have the kids be closer to me. That's what I gain out of it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's still this almost overlooming shadow. And I'll say this to end it, why the court, I feel like it's best to deal with stuff outside of the court. They're not really there to help you. They don't have a vested interest in making anything work. To me, it makes it worse. Now you got papers to, because that's the only thing that came out of this. If she argues something, I have papers to defend myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, you know, the way I look at it, I just got a job because I lost my other job. I just got a job. First thing was asked, did you submit the paperwork for the child support? Did you give them the paperwork for them to start taking child support out? And I was like, why would I do that? You know, because my income changed significantly. I'm not going to just continue to pay something that's there. Well, you need something needs to happen. I was like, have I missed a payment with you yet? No. So that's what I'm saying. When you're dealing with that's the only thing that I could think would come out of it is if you're dealing with somebody who is manipulative, malicious, and just has the intent of self-preservation, the court could help in a sense. They should help. But I felt defenseless and I paid good money for a lawyer. It didn't help me any. You know how embarrassing it was when they sent the paperwork to my job and say, oh, we, you know, got to garnish his check as if I never took care of my family. That's how that felt. Like you're saying, I'm not reliable. You know? And that's the sad thing. The lawyer said, you know, the sad thing is when you were separated, sadly, you shouldn't have given her no money. Because now the judge see that you've been giving her this money, he's going to expect you to maintain that.
But that also puts you in a catch-22, right? Because you don't give her anything. That makes you feel like you're not caring for your girls. And then that gives her reason to say he hasn't been taking care of his daughters. And so, yeah, it puts you in a situation where you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And obviously, I have zero legal knowledge of the court systems anywhere, let alone in what's going on in Tennessee or Florida, not even here in Philly where I reside. Right. But it just seems like the way that's painted, if you didn't do anything, it would have looked bad. You did something, it looked worse. So you can't win either way.
No, you can't win either way. And the thing is, why am I paying a lawyer? She had the advantage. And that's the number one thing that the mediator or arbitrator was saying. Look, we could sit here and go back and forth, but she's not paying her lawyer. You are. So you're going to pay me and pay your lawyer because your lawyer got to be here throughout this whole thing. And I'm like, wow. Wow. It's like, if somebody wanted me dead, that was the fastest way to do it, you know? And I just think that everyone should come at it with cool heads, because I'll tell you where I was triggered.
We're having some connectivity issues. Yeah. So last I heard you say was when she made up some papers herself.
Yeah. Like you do it yourself, divorce paperwork.
Okay.
she created her own and she presented it to me. And everything seems like, you know, I could agree to it. The only thing that troubled me was when she said, you know, until I go to some substance abuse rehab, I would not be able to see my girls. So that right there affected me. It triggered me. It made me lose my cool.
Sure.
Whereas if I had took 10 minutes, read it, and said, I'll get back to you, you know, what I did was I immediately left the house, looked up lawyers in Tennessee, went to a lawyer. Lawyer saw my emotional state of mind. And what did the lawyer do?
Took advantage of it.
Took advantage of it. He was like, oh, this guy's going to, he's going to pay this. He want to see his kids.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So and that's what I hold myself accountable for, you know? That's part of where I say you have to have accountability. And that in a sense, I had to hold myself accountable for that.
As we're coming to an end, bro, just two things. First, I want to ask you, after everything that you've just shared with your boy for the past hour and a half, what keeps your inner motor going to the point that you're able to look past these things and still want to wake up in the morning and be there for your girls?
Man. Yeah. That's another very good question. Part of it is responsibility. And that's one thing that my dad instilled in me, too. You don't run away from your responsibility. You don't fold under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cliche, pressure makes diamonds. And I think I owe it to my girls to show them the true value of a man.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because daughter's first crush is their dad.
Yeah, Kai already told you that.
All right. Kai shows it very well. In the back of Jaleesa's head, she knows well too. She's like, you know, my dad provided love, care, security.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's going to look for that in a man too.
For sure.
So when I lay my head at night and I think of them and I wake up in the morning and I really don't feel like engaging with my ex, but I think of them again. And for that, because it's typically that the whole day is 4 hours I spend with them and I am pouring information, you know. So those are the motivating factor, that time that I look forward to it. So when they were in Tennessee, you know, I had to rely on technology. And that wasn't really the best option because, you know, my daughter didn't really feel like engaging with me
mm-hmm.
when she would, you know, with the mother around. So
mm-hmm.
going through all of that, it's just seeing a smile on their face and being available for whatever question that they might need to ask and be able to tell them I love them at the end of the day, you know? So that's my motivating factor. I do it. I literally do it for them. I don't know. That's why it's hard to be in a relationship. That's why it's hard to open myself up because all I have is for them right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The last thing I want to ask you is, hold on. I got my, mm-hmm. I got my nephew here and you could probably hear him in the background calling for me. Mm-hmm.
Calling you.
Yeah. Last thing I want to ask you is let's step away from our present and I'm going to invite you to meet me 10 years into the future.
Uh-huh.
where Julissa is 22.
22, right.
And Kai is 16.
Right.
Let's say that at that moment, the heat of this really troublesome relationship between you and their mother has cooled. And it's now more of an amicable situation. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's the case. Let's pretend that will be the case.
Right.
You're now at a place where you can have adult conversations with your daughter, Julissa. You can start to have more adult conversations with your daughter, Kai. Mm-hmm. I want you to think about while you're at Starbucks with Julissa or wherever you're accustomed to taking Kai, I want you to think about you talking to your girls at that moment. And you know they will be facing their challenges in their relationships and their lives and what have you. And so I want you to talk to your girls, their future self, and provide to them some word of wisdom from their dad in a similar way as your dad did for you before he passed.
That's a very good question, because I had dinner with a friend last night that I haven't seen in forever. And she was telling me about her daughters. One is 20 and the other one is 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of get me to thinking, because I was like, you know, whenever your husband get back in town, I want to chop it up with him. I haven't met her husband because she left the company way before I did. But it was good catching up with her. And she said something that really left me conflicted. Because as fathers, we always say we got to be ready to have those tough conversations, you know, mm-hmm. about sex, about life and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I never was prepared, or I'm not prepared with the scenario she gave that happened. They're doing well for themselves. They're you know, they're successful, her and her husband. And they had a sweet 16 for the daughter. And she has a boyfriend who's, you know, very, parents are successful too. And to make a long story short, the boyfriend came to the dad, pulled him aside to talk to him. Ultimately, asking the dad permission to have the daughter that night. I was like, why are you telling me this? Every dad is hell no, you know?
Nope. Number one, brave of that young man. Brave of that young man to do that. I mean, he must have some cojones to be able to do that. Nevertheless, that would have been the last night of his short life.
Oh, absolutely. And here's the reason why he agreed. Because the mom was livid. She was like, no, you don't do that. Why the hell would you say? She was livid. Said, look, 3 months ago, it probably happened already. And we wouldn't have known. I'm like, okay, I could see some rationality in that, but no.
No, son.
She's like, I said, you would just rather not know? I said, well, you know, I just know. You don't ask me that question, right? So, no. Yep. It would have been his,
no, son.
I'd be like, you know what? Very brave of you. Just exit this way, and then he would have caught one.
Yeah, that's, you know? Yeah.
But, so, it had me thinking, like, you know, 10 years from now, to have a conversation with Julissa and Kai about life. I've always said to them, because Julissa said something to me when she was about 9 or 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She said that, because I asked her and I said, you know, mom and I love you. She said, yeah, for sure, I know that. I said, you know that we'll do anything for you, you know? We're your parents. We're going to always look out for you. And she said, yeah. I said, okay. And then she said, but dad, I don't think mom loves you as much as you love her. when I was 19 years old. Then she wrote a paperwork on forgiveness, the benefits of forgiving someone, giving a second chance. I said, what inspired you to write about this? You deserve a second chance, Dad. You know, you did wrong on a lot of different avenues about life. She was saying that. And so ultimately, she asked most recently, why do you still do what you do? I said, well, that's easy. I do it for you guys. She was like, but you need a life too, Dad. Huh? You got to be able to live too. I said, listen, the most valuable thing you're going to get out of this experiment, this experience, I said experiment, experience is no man is going to undervalue you. I've never mistreated your mom. I've never put hands on your mom. You know, and even though she's not my wife anymore, I still want to see that she's supported and taken care of, because she is the mother of my kids. So any man that's not willing to do that, even if you have a fallen out with him and you have a kid with him, not a man. All right. Two, to show you the capacity of what a man should be able to endure. God built men be strong, although sometimes I feel like women are even 10 times stronger. But in essence, a strong man, you know, is one that is emotionally grounded, mentally sound, and has to express himself in any given situation. And this is what I've been learning, is to be able to express myself still, even if I'm being ridiculed, I'm being belittled, or anything of that nature. So I endure all of that for you guys, you know. So it's important when you're evaluating relationships or you're dating, those are some of the things that you need to look for. You know, both of them, I'm going to be very transparent about that, you know, because even now, Jaleesa know about all my shortcoming with her mother, you know. I mean, she had the gall to ask me, she was like, so did you cheat on my mom? I said, wow. I said, that's very straightforward. And, you know, the question that, and I tell her, there's no question that she can ask me that I will not answer. So she put me to the test.
Yeah, she did.
And I said, when you get older, you will understand. I said, cheating is cheating. Even if you give somebody a hug with the intent of wanting more than a hug, and you're married, that's cheating, because your mind went there. Even if you're texting with the person and you're not doing anything, but you're texting, your mind went there still. So that's cheating. I said, there's no specifics I could give you, but cheating is cheating, you know? So be sure you find a man that's going to be honest with you, that's going to be open with you, because communication, consistency, and care are the foundation that's going to build a strong relationship, you know? So, of course, they're going to be elaborated on more, but those are the elements I feel like I would share with them 10 years from now, just to safeguard their pilgrimage into experiments or experiencing different relationships. Because by 22, I'm sure she's going to have, you know, some relationship, but one or two might be more significant than when she was 15, 16.
Sure, you know? Sure.
And she's going to want to know how to decipher that. So that's what I would share with them, I don't know if I went too far out.
You answered the question. Yeah, it's been eye-opening for me. I mean, there are, like we said earlier, we've known each other for almost 3 decades. But there are things that I didn't know about you and your experience that I got to learn today. And thank you for opening up and being transparent and open and willing to share your experience and to share those things that are very painful and vulnerable, but
right.
I know that there will be someone who hears this that will be able to gain so much from your experience and from your perspective to help them in their situation out. So again, bro, thank you.
No, I appreciate the platform. Keep doing what you're doing because, you know, like you said, someone is going to gain something because I've known the different guests that you've had. You know, it was eye opening. You know, and I like the different knowledge and experience they bring to the platform. And I think that speaks volume because, you know, the title of it, Welcome to Fatherhood, there's so much that goes into that.
So much.
You know, there could be, it's not just directly just being a father, you know. There's so many different elements to it, and I think you've been doing a great job.
Appreciate you, bro.
Different panel of people, and just keep doing it, man.
Appreciate you, big bro. I appreciate you, bro. Sir.